Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope you all are having a great start to your weekend. I want to thank you for tuning in to the KE Report weekend show. And on this weekend show, boy oh boy, we have a lot to talk about when it comes to some pretty important U.S. economic data, i.e. the jobs number that we saw this week, some central bank meetings to recap, including the Fed, and some very important market moves, especially at the end of the week, is, boy, oh boy, we started to see a bit of a meltdown almost across the board. First half of this show is going to be focused on recapping all of what I just said, and in the second half of the show, switch our focus a little bit more to the resource sector and ask a fund manager what opportunities he sees in underlying commodity stocks. Kicking off this show, we are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark to Market website. Mark, let's start off with that U.S. jobs number. It was a big miss. Headline number, 114,000 jobs added. I was seeing the estimate somewhere around 185,000 jobs. Unemployment rate rose to 4.3%, which is the highest since October 2021. This seems to be a continuation of something we talked to you about last week, and that is continued weakening data and a lot of generalists now starting to say, look, this is not looking good for the U.S. economy. Mark, break down that jobs number. How concerned are you about this figure?
Yeah, so Corey, I think that Powell, I thought the Federal Reserve Chair Powell is very clear about this. He says when it comes to the inflation, there's one number that the Fed watches, that they target is the PCE deflator, personal consumption expenditure deflator. And of course, the CPI is a lead indicator for that. But when it comes to the employment data, the labor market, Powell says that there's not just one number that captures it. So multidimensional labor market. And even before today's U.S. jobs data, we've had a series of weak data coming from the labor market. I'm not just thinking about weekly jobless claims, elevated to continuing claims. I'm looking at the employment cost index, which is much cooler. That's a measure of wage pressure and non-wage benefit pressures, like healthcare costs. Unit labor costs, that's the measure of productivity as well, is embedded in there. What's the cost unit per output? And we saw softer numbers there. From the JOLTS report, we've seen hiring slowing. We've seen people quitting their jobs slowing. That's all signs of a weakening of the labor market. And we've seen some of the surveys like the ISM pointing to weak labor market data. And so I'd say that the takeaway from today's data, the most important thing that I think is going to be in the headlines is that the unemployment rate went up to 4.3%. And part of it is because the participation rate went up. But this, at the end of the day, the important part of the rise of the unemployment is that it triggers what's known as the Sams rule. And she was a Federal Reserve economist, and the rules is something like this. When the three-month average of unemployment rises half a percentage point above its low point for 12 months, it always signaled a recession in the U.S. Powell referred to it as a statistical regularity, where we pass that threshold. And so when we pass that threshold, you know, it sort of just fans these concerns that despite the strong growth we had in Q2, that the U.S. economy is either in or headed for a recession. And this has had a ripple effect through the not only through the dollar, the foreign exchange market, but also the interest rate market. I mean, you look at what's happened, the U.S. two-year note yield after the jobs data fell over 25 basis points. Powell said earlier this week that though the Fed's confidence that inflation is moving back to target had increased, they still weren't quite there yet, explaining why they didn't cut rates at the end of July. I think that the market basically says you might not have eased rates, Federal Reserve. We're going to do it for you. And that's basically what's happened. But looking at one of the largest drops in the U.S. two-year yield, and not only for this year, but for many years, basically going back to COVID, we're talking about roughly 40, 45 basis point decline in the U.S. two-year yield. And that's, again, coming after the jobs data, but after the hints from Powell that the Fed was getting, that there was a discussion to cut rates in July, but the clear majority favored waiting. And I think that wait is clearly now that markets expecting a cut in September, but not just 25 basis points. The market is pricing in roughly 75% chance that the 50 basis point cut to kick off the U.S. easing cycle.
Yeah, Mark, a lot of people are tuning into possibly a 50 basis point cut versus the 25 in September. And to your point on that SOMS rule, I mean, another one of the stats that they use on it is that in a 12-month period, if you see the unemployment rate go up over 0.5%, and we've gone from 3.7 to 4.3, so up 0.6%, that has triggered it. And like you say, a lot of worries about recession now. But the other thing that we've been hearing about is the yield curve steepening and it possibly uninverting in the near future. And if that happens, a lot of people made a big to-do about the yield curve inverting and saying, oh, the recession is imminent. But it's really when the yield curve uninverts that we start seeing more of a recession warning. So with all these things stacking up, do you think that forces the hand of the Fed to actually do a series of rate cuts, or is 50 basis points enough in September?
Okay, I think, Shad, that when I say the Federal Reserve doesn't do things one at a time, I put it more like this. The Federal Reserve's policy was set when they feared the economy was overheating. That's no longer the case. It's not just Powell suggested that the economy is just normalizing. And again, I really think that we should think about a soft landing of the economy as the early stage of the end of a business cycle. First, the economy, it's growing fine, and then we have a condition where inflation slows, the economy slows, everybody jumps up and down, there's a great soft landing, and then the economy continues to weaken, inflation continues to fall, and we have a hard landing. So to me, the soft landing is just part of that cycle, and that we should be looking for a recession, whether it comes this year, next year, exactly how they date it is beyond me, but I agree with you that the different indicators that we look at, including the yield curve. Today, I should say after the jobs data, the yield curve is now about 6 basis points inverted still, which is really the least since 2022 when it first became inverted. And so, and I agree with you as well, that it's really when the yield curve steepens, that has been positively sloped coming out of that inversion, that is another one of these recession signals. And so, yes, yeah, so I'm concerned about this, but I think that we should expect the Federal Reserve to continue to cut rates. The market is, there's 3 meetings left in this year for the Federal Reserve. The market has 117 basis points of cuts discounted. That I'm looking at the Fed funds futures, 117 basis points. And so that's essentially you get the 50 basis points in September and then another cut in November, another cut in December. I think it's interesting where are we going to go, just like on the way up. We talked about what the terminal rate is for Fed funds. And I think we have to think about where's the terminal rate on the bottom. And my first guess, and now given like our current information set, is that Fed funds are going to say 3.25 to 3.5. And that's going to probably take us well into 2026.
Yeah, series of rate cuts, hey, just like we got on the way up a series of rate hikes. Now we're going in the opposite direction. But Mark, look, when we look back at economic data, it almost seemed like we were in the stable range. And starting in early 2022 through kind of mid-2023, and then everything's been trending lower broadly. It hasn't been plummeting, but it has been trending lower. But this isn't just in the U.S. So could we be potentially looking at not just a recession in the U.S., but a global recession?
Yeah, I think that's what concerns the Federal Reserve. It's hard to imagine how the U.S. economy can continue to grow robustly when our major trading partners and other large economic centers are weak. And I think that goes for the U.S., for Canada and Mexico, for Europe. We've seen a series of weak data. And so, yeah, I think that the business cycle, increasingly, as the global capital markets become integrated, I think that the business cycle becomes somewhat more integrated. That is, the divergence between economies narrows. And I think that the narrowing of this divergence happens at a lower absolute level of growth. And ultimately, with the U.S. being on the top now, it's going to weaken. And that's really the real news. It's not when a weak country like Japan, for example, or Europe struggle. That's like, I want to say that's why we have airplane accidents make the news, but car accidents rarely do. The U.S. economy weakening like this is new news, really. I think people have been talking about it. But the economic data, including that Q2 GDP that came in just before the FOMC meeting, stronger than many people expected. But that's what happens. Typically, the economy doesn't just like slow down, slow down, slow down, and then tip over into recession. It's usually almost like a V. You're growing fine, and then all of a sudden you're not.
Well, and Mark, just to that point, it's not all in one area either, because there's areas like manufacturing that have been in a recession for 2 years, if you look at the boom bust data, and they've been below 50. But then there's areas like the real estate market that have actually been doing okay. And to your point, the GDP number outperformed expectations at 2.8% growth. That's not nearly as dire as a lot of other nations are facing. But to your point about the U.S., the biggest engine of the world economy, starting to falter a little bit, could it still be the cleanest shirt in the dirty laundry bin? Because look at Europe, look at Japan, and I know China's growing, but they've got their own problems with their real estate markets, the stock market. So there doesn't seem to be any big pockets of super growth on the planet. Could the U.S. still fare better just because, yeah, it's starting to weaken, but maybe not as much as other countries are?
Well, yeah, to me, Shad, what you point to really is, why is the U.S. economy growing so much faster? And I think a lot has to do with our budget deficit. And the budget deficit, the next fiscal year's budget, baked in the cake already. And so, yeah, I could see the U.S. economy performing a bit better than the trading partners. But when it comes to the foreign exchange market, I think you have a little bit of a different story. I think that the market is still very long dollars. It's really the cash register for quite some time. And so I think about what happened. Just think about the recent history. Q4 last year, remember, it seems kind of wild now, but people were thinking the Fed was going to cut six or seven times this year. And global interest rates fell. The key, though, U.S. interest rates fell, the dollar fell. In Q1 of this year, the market realized they had stated the case, and the interest rates rose in the U.S. They rose globally. Dollar rose. So to me, the real key piece here is what happens to U.S. interest rates as far as it goes, as far as it's related to the foreign exchange market. And so I do think the dollar has turned. We've seen a huge move on the yen. That's partly the Bank of Japan raising interest rates, hawkish rhetoric, unwinding of these yen carry trades. But I think that we've probably seen the low for the euro. Well, we got down to almost 107.75 this past week. I think that could be the low for this move. And I look for a retest, maybe 109.50, 110 area. Same thing with sterling. We got down to 127, and I think we get back above 129. We got to look at last year's high, and they're 131.5 or so. So I do think that the dollar basically, the dollar was stretched, overvalued after many years rally. And one of the key legs of it was Fed policy. And if Fed policy is going to change, and now it looks like it's going to change aggressively, I think that's trouble for the U.S. dollar. But just on a price level, cyclical move, not the whole de-dollarization story. This is just about, where is the dollar going in the next 3 to 6 months? And I think it's going to be lower.
Let's talk about markets then. For investors, if we are in this environment where the Fed is going to be cutting rates, but it is in the face of weak economic data, potential recession right around the corner or already here, are there any opportunities in equity markets, in commodities, in anything as maybe a safety play as these rates continue to go lower?
So I'm thinking that cash is king here. And I think what the tendency is going to be is that people like myself, many people in the audience, many people who I know have been waiting for a pullback to buy U.S. stocks. And I'm afraid that's going to lead to like a tendency of jumping in too early. What strikes me looking at the S&Ps is a gap lower that hasn't been filled from July 17th. And then after the jobs data, we have another gap lower in the S&P 500. So we've retraced. It sounds kind of weird because of how bloody it's felt in the past week or 2 weeks. But the S&Ps have only retraced about half of the leg up since mid-April. We are still at very elevated levels. And so I can imagine, like, well, what level would I be tempted to begin getting back involved in the equity market? And I'm looking at, over time, what seems to have been good value is beginning to buy near the 200-day moving average in the S&P 500. So you say, well, where is the 200-day moving average? It's about 5,000 now. So all that big gain that got us up to about 5,670, I think we have to unwind that. And that 5,000 level in the S&Ps is not, it still is pretty elevated. I remember when we crossed that, I think we were talking in that time when the S&Ps got above there, I was cautious, and yet it left 11-12% on the table. And here we are, I think, coming back to that level now.
Yeah, Mark, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say the 5,000 level used to be something people were dreaming about, and now people are crying in their beer about it because it's pulling back to 5,000. But these are still very elevated levels for the market indexes. And even though there's been a rollover, it's still from such high levels, from record high levels, that we're still in kind of nosebleed territory historically. The other thing that's really worth noting is the volatility has really ramped up. If you look at the VIX, it was stuck in the 12 to 15 range forever. It seemed like for months and months and months. And then just in the last couple of days, it shot up. I mean, earlier today, it was up 55% in one day. It's only up 42% at the time of this recording. But we've seen a huge rise in volatility, which means people are putting on hedges. They're hedging their bets a little bit. But to your point about people jumping in a little too early, do you think that this has some legs to it as far as this downward move in the markets, even beyond the 5,000 level? And that maybe people really need to let it play through before they start pulling money in off the sidelines.
Well, yeah, I think that, of course, I was just talking to someone who was talking about like trying to catch a falling knife. And at what point is the stock market so, is the sell-off so attractive that it's like you can't help but really want to buy? And I suspect that you're right, that there's nothing magical about the 200-day moving average and at 5,000 level, that ultimately it wouldn't surprise me to go back down. I mean, January's low for the year is about just below 4,700. So I think that one, as one begins putting money back to work in the stock market, you don't put it back in all at once. You bleed it in, maybe dollar cost average it in, beginning maybe at the 200-day moving average, but prepare it for it to fall a few more percentage points for sure. And this is still a relatively elevated valuation measure. And as you go through the, we're getting through the earnings season, and it's quite surprising to me about the number of companies that are missing on the revenue side. What caught my eye was McDonald's saying that same store sales had actually fallen for the first time since 2020. McDonald's, I thought, was always this recession-proof kind of thing. They've been cutting prices. And so when I saw a decline in same store sales, to me, that's another one of these.
Seems like a recession is finally coming, one that we've talked about for a couple of years. Now it might be here. What does that mean for the commodity markets then, Mark? Because we've seen most commodities outside of gold, which just hit all-time highs and has reversed a little bit from that level, but still up in the 2450 plus range. Are all commodities going to struggle from here because of the fact that we're entering a recession, even if the dollar keeps dropping?
So I think that this idea that commodities have to go up in a weak dollar environment is a bit exaggerated. I think that at least where we are this phase, I think that focuses on demand. And we were talking about oil before we began recording, and I think oil is a typical like story here. You got a weaker dollar. You have Middle East tensions again, where the Iranians and Israelis look like they're going to be coming to blows in a more serious way, in a way that could escalate. Oil did pop up initially on the news, but demand side seems to be what brought us back down. And we're finishing the week with September WTI off on the week, off about 4.5%. And we're trading near $73.5 a barrel now. And we tested, whatever it was, $82, $84 last month. And here we are, despite the likely escalation of Middle East tensions, demand side is really what's pulled us down as people think not only recession in the US, but we've had weak demand in China and weak demand Europe and Japan.
Well, Mark, we were talking about the commodities a little bit before this call, and we were talking about how most everything was rolling over. And yeah, it is surprising to see oil rolling over with Middle East tensions and with a weaker dollar. But gold was getting a safe haven bid earlier in the week, midweek, Wednesday and Thursday, and that's when it spiked up to all-time highs. And it seemed to be getting a bid in tandem with the dollar and with bonds, so it seemed to be a safe haven play. But we were talking off mic that now it's rolling over on a day where you'd expect it to be up. Is it possible that people are going to take profits in anything that's up right now to backstop all the positions that are down?
Yeah, I think that's sometimes typical of what, how the markets react. I think gold is really like a bit schizophrenic. On one hand, it's a safe haven. People buy it when the world looks like a mess. They think it's a hedge for inflation. But other times, it acts like another risk asset. And I think that we've morphed from a safe haven back to that risk asset where everything is selling off. And I think that's what happens too for a lot of large pools of capital. They take a loss in one area. And how do they fund it? They take off a winner as well. Even though the logic, right, we're told, especially on the retail side, that to let your profits run and cut your losers. But sometimes I think people who are making decisions book their winners to help cover their losers.
Mark, looking ahead, is there anything the rest of this summer that could potentially change this overall quite negative narrative for the markets and for the economy?
I don't see the economic data in the next couple of weeks with the heft to do so. I think that so besides the U.S. inflation report towards the middle of August, I think that the Jackson Hole symposium at the end of the month is the next big event for the Fed to clarify where they stand. So yeah, I just don't see the data having this sort of gravitas to change people's sentiment. This is going to take a while, just given the broad indicators that we're looking at on the labor market, which is ultimately deflationary. So my best guess is nothing's going to turn us around, but I do think that there is a pain trade out there that could take place as early as Monday. And that is, given this huge decline in interest rates, sell-off in stocks, this recessionary fear. One of the things that triggered it in the U.S. this week, besides the jobs at the end of the week, was the softer-than-expected ISM manufacturing. Well, on Monday, we're going to get the ISM services. And I think the pain trade is for that ISM services to be a bit stronger than the market expects. Back in June, it fell below 50 at 48.8. I think that sort of overstates the case. And so I suspect that we could get a firm number on Monday, and that would help the market consolidate and pull back from the world's coming to an end type of cliffhanger that we're having today.
All right, Mark, great chatting with you. Thank you very much for breaking down all the important data and news from this week, as well as this market meltdown, in a sense, to end this week. Boy, oh boy, the end of summer might be pretty rough for investors, but it's been a pretty good run over the last couple of years. Now, finally, that recession that everyone's been waiting for might be very much around the corner, and that's pulling everything lower. We'll see if there is a bottom anytime soon. Mark, thank you again for taking time with us on this weekend show, everyone. Remember, you can check out Mark's website, Mark2Market, that will be posted in the show notes. Everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back with Matt Geiger talking commodity stocks.
Thanks, Corey. Good luck, everybody.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.